This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of Every Day a Miracle, Trusting the God Who Heals Us Inside and Out, written and narrated by Matthew Stephen Brown, and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
Hello, this is Russell Moore Podcast, and I'm him. And one of the things that we do on this show is to take your questions on moral and spiritual dilemmas that you're facing. And one of those dilemmas came to me by email this week. And before I get to it, remember that you can send me your question at questions@russellmoore.com about whatever it is that you're trying to figure out in your family, in your workplace, in your community, in your residence hall, where whatever you're dealing with right now. Let me know, and I'll try to answer it, and I'll make up a pseudonym for you unless you specifically tell me to use your name. So you don't have to worry. I'm not going to say, we've got a email coming in from so-and-so about his heroin addiction. That's not the way that this works. So Rupert, that's a name I made up just now for this person, wrote in and said, I have an ethics question, and I'm sure that many other readers and listeners deal with the same dilemma. We have had senior adults who are widowed or a widower, and they will cohabitate but not get married because if they get remarried, they lose their Social Security benefits. And some will say their vows to each other. And I know pastors that will officiate a private ceremony but not file a marriage license. And I've never done that before, but I have two from my current church who live together and said their vows to each other, even though one of them is a retired Baptist pastor and they have not filed a marriage license. So Rupert's questions are these. Do you feel that this is cheating the rules of Social Security? Is it okay for a pastor to officiate an unofficial wedding and not file a license? Is it okay for a couple to say their vows to each other? And I'm assuming he means privately. And what if their union cannot be sexual because of age? Is it okay biblically for them to live together? Okay. All right. Now, he says, Rupert says, in a previous podcast, I heard you say that the wedding is not about the couple, but about the people. And I agree. Now, surprisingly, I have gotten this question a lot. The first time they ever got this question, I thought, well, this is really sort of a niche kind of a problem. Not many people are going to face this or have to deal with it. But over the years, I've come to see I was wrong because almost anybody who has a high percentage of senior adults in their vicinity and are ministering to them are going to run up against this problem. So let me try to answer it. And first thing I want to say is there's always the risk that when one answers a question like this, where the question is this right or wrong, that what it will be heard as is therefore condemn the people who are wrong. That's not what I'm arguing here. As a matter of fact, I think that we can understand what the motivations are here for most people who are in this situation and why most of them would not see themselves as doing anything wrong. So the old saying, to understand all is to forgive all, is not quite right. Just because you can understand the motivations doesn't mean that something is now morally neutral or morally okay. There are many times when I will say, I don't approve of that, but I get it. You know, I remember in early on in ministry, we knew a couple where the husband, at least from what people could see from the outside, the husband seemed to be this really long-suffering sort of a guy, and his wife just would berate him in, you know, in front of people, would just sort of correct him as though he was a child. And I remember one day, this guy just got up, left. Nobody ever saw him again. She didn't see him again. He was just gone. And I remember saying to my wife, I don't approve of it, but I get it. And what I meant by that is I can see what the thought process is in his mind and why he believed that he didn't have any other choice. Now, I think he did have other choices, but I can see why he would not think that he did. And so when we're thinking about this situation of senior adults who are really looking at their financial stability and security, and sometimes they don't have children to rely on at all, you can understand where this is coming into view. You can also understand that it's a problem because the government is unfairly penalizing marriage in this case. And that's something that, biblically speaking, is good for people who are called to marriage to marry. And that's why the Apostle Paul says it's better not to marry, to carry out the mission that one has been given, but it's better in 1 Corinthians 7, in a passage that's often misinterpreted, it's better to marry than to burn, which previously people thought that meant to burn in hell, often from their English Bibles, but it actually means to burn with passion. So it's better to marry than to live in this state of frustration. Now, so marriage is a good thing. God created it. And loneliness is a bad thing. And often loneliness is at almost epidemic levels among senior adults. If they're what we used to call shut-in, or if they're in even senior adult communities, there can be a lot of people there, but it can be a very lonely place. People are isolated in their rooms. And also it's true that sometimes younger people have this impression that there comes an age where people suddenly become sexless. And let me tell you, that is not true. And as a matter of fact, when I had a grandmother who was in sort of an assisted living senior adult type of community, the thing that is so shocking to me is all the relationship drama. Genevieve is really in love with Harold, but he really has a thing for Vivian, and now Vivian and Genevieve are upset with each other. I mean, all of this almost middle school drama, it doesn't change, doesn't matter how old you get. And not just the sort of silly side of our lives as people who long for connection with one another, but also those good created structures of a desire to be one flesh and to be in community with one another. So this is a good thing. That is true. Another reason, though, why people would be willing to entertain this in their minds in a way that they wouldn't if we were just talking about two single people in the prime of their lives is because they will say to themselves, well, marriage is not a government creation, and marriage isn't about the license. And what they'll do is to say, look back at when Jesus is talking about marriage, when he's saying from the beginning he made them male and female, and when he's addressing the question of the Sadducees in Mark 12 about the woman who has had seven husbands, when he's saying marriage, he's not talking about the sort of process that we have in the United States where one goes and gets a marriage license and whoever's officiating signs it. That is true, but what the Bible is talking about is community accountability. So marriage, biblically speaking, is not just about the two people involved saying, I'm committed to you. That can happen in any sort of circumstance where I can say something but then can change my mind with no implications of it. So when you think about in Scripture, there's a distinction made between, again, 1 Corinthians 7, those who are not married and those who are married. There's a distinction between non-marital sex acts and marital sex. What's the difference? Well, the difference is not the license, but the difference is a sense of community accountability and community recognition of this covenant being made between two people. So sometimes you will have people who will say, well, marriage is not just a contract, and I agree with that. Marriage is covenantal. It points toward the union of Christ and the church. It's not just a contract, but it's not anything less than a contract. It is a contract in the sense of accountability. So in our system, that sort of government license, for lack of a better word, is the way that a community affirms and holds people accountable to their vows. So think about, for instance, Joseph with Mary. He was going to put her aside quietly. There was a process involved with betrothal that meant that Joseph and Mary were accountable to the community in more than just, well, we changed our mind. Sort of a way, even with betrothal. That can happen. And you see examples of this happening biblically with people who decided not to marry someone or decided not to return romantic affection to someone. But betrothal and then marriage are in a different category. There's accountability that is there. In our system, that is coming with a sort of licensing, which means all that the license does is to say that the state has an interest in this marriage, and the state does. The state is the one having to adjudicate at the civil level. These people are married. These people are the parents of these children. This is what the inheritance structure looks like, and here's what the here's who owns what in terms of a potential divorce. All of that is in the interest of the state. That's not all marriage is. That's not even the most important thing marriage is, but that is a key component of it. Now, that would not be the situation if you had a different kind of system, and maybe it's two extremes here. So you think of a medieval sort of Christendom, where the church is what holds the culture together. You know, I'm not a fan of Christendom for all sorts of reasons, but suppose you have that. If you have that, then yes, you wouldn't need any sort of a government license because the church would be and the culture would be cohesive enough to hold people accountable to the way that they might mistreat one another or the way that they might violate their vows. Or on the other extreme, maybe a sectarian community that is distinct from the outside culture, such as the Amish, where there's no need for a government recognition of the marriage necessarily because the community is defining what the marriage is and they're continuing to hold the couple accountable. That's not the case in American society writ large. It, even in places that believe that they have recovered church discipline, usually what is in place actually isn't church discipline in a fully orbed Matthew 18, 1 Corinthians 5 sort of sense, because what it ultimately becomes is just the ability to run people off. Because the church exists within a cultural ecosystem. The cultural ecosystem is individualistic, and people are able just to leave certain communities and contexts at will. Now, there's a lot of good that comes with that, as you know, I could argue all day later on, but there's also a lot of bad that comes with that. So the point of the marriage license is to say there are vows here that the community has recognized. And so there are implications if one breaks them. Now, in the case of these senior adults, you're probably not going to have children resulting from the union for obvious reasons, unless you have an Abraham and Sarah sort of situation. But there can be money involved. There can be sexual fidelity. And there can be a number of other issues that have to do with the vows. So no, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't officiate at this wedding. So you can hear my dog Waylon barking in the background, and I'm really sorry, but I'm here home, broadcasting from home, and this is the risk that I run when that's the case. So I would not do it for that reason in terms of marriage. I would also not do it in terms of the issue of truth-telling. So Rupert asked here, is this lying in terms of the government, in terms of Social Security? Well, yeah, because what these people are attempting to do is to kind of circumvent the penalty that they would receive financially for being married by pretending not to be married. So again, you go back to Abraham and Sarah. That has been done in Scripture. That's not, though, something that is commended to people who are to have the external and the internal lining up and to give to those to whom honor is due. Now, there's a time to be able to say none of your business to the government. There are all sorts of things that the state doesn't have any legitimate function and doesn't have any legitimate ability to interrogate. And so saying none of your business is perfectly legitimate in those cases. This isn't one of them because, again, the state does have an interest in marriage, but also because Social Security is a contractual relationship. I mean, even though most of us don't think about it at all, we participate in the Social Security system and we don't think about the contractual nature of it any more than we do often what we click in order to download an app. There's a bunch of stuff there. I'm not reading through it. I'm not even thinking about it, but it's there. So I think that there is a sense of I'm going to circumvent certain rules that we as a society have agreed to that I don't think is on the level. Now, when Rupert is asking if they're saying vows to each other privately, and I'm assuming that the implication is here that they're saying vows before God to one another. Yes, but again, that's not just the two of them. This is the two of them in community with other people. And so if the state were to come in and, for instance, forbid people to marry, then I think civil disobedience would be appropriate in that case. To say you don't have the ability to do that. Or if the state were to come in and say, these people have to marry these other people, I think civil disobedience is perfectly legitimate to say, we're not going to do that. But that's not what's happening here. So Rupert says, well, what about they're living together and cohabiting if they can't have sex due to age? Well, I think that the implication here is that it's still a romantic relationship that's happening in a living arrangement outside of marriage. I mean, you say they can't have sex because of age. Often that's not really a permanent reality. And I don't really think that we're going to be in the situation of wanting to sort of check that out in people's lives. So I would say no. I can't imagine a situation where I would say that that's all right. I would just say, get married. Just as I would say to young people who often have the same situation, who say, well, I don't know how we're going to make it. I don't know how we're going to be able to live married to one another. And say, marry and work it out. Work it out from then on out. So if you're dealing with these senior adults, again, the response to them is not die fornicator, you know, nor is the response, I think, to judge or to condemn the pastors who are officiating at these marriages that don't have licensure. I'm not saying that. Again, you can see how people are thinking to themselves that this actually is a legitimate marriage. I'm just saying that a legitimate marriage means that there are going to be consequences for the breaking of those vows other than just I'm gone. And so I don't think that that actually is a legitimate marriage in our system. So what I would say is have an understanding of that, but I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't counsel anybody to do it. Instead, what I would counsel is, well, we're the church. We're supposed to bear one another's burdens. We're supposed to care for one another. You have a couple of senior adults in your congregation. They're not sure that they can make it financially, but they're called to be married to one another. They're in love with one another. Help them out. Help them out in every way that the church can. That's a legitimate good for these two people to be married to one another, and they're sacrificing in order to do it. And then more long term, let's work to fix that system. It's not a good system to say to people in order to get the Social Security benefits that you've worked for and were promised to you, you have to be single. I don't think that's the way to go. So you have a question. Let me know what it is, something you're grappling with in work, life, family, church, relationships, whatever. Send it to me at questions@russellmoore.com. And I am going to commit before the community that next time my dog Waylon will not be in the background. So thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, or wherever that you listen, and leave a review there. It really helps for people to find the show. And be sure also to check out Signposts, where I have conversations with thinkers and leaders on a variety of subjects. My conversation partners in recent days have included Tim Keller, Marilynne Robinson, and others. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap the cover art. You'll find the show notes with some resources for you. This is Russell Moore, Onward.